Yes. Welcome to special Crespo Diso Film School episode, bonus episode of Cinema Crespo Diso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, and we're talking about them horror movies.
Which I think is odd, Chris, because we both mentioned on a number of occasions that horror really isn't either of our bags.
Dude, you get... That was supposed to be a creeping door, but I think it was a snake fart.
You gotta put some grease on that door.
Gotta put some grease on that door. Squeaky. That's my co-host, Drew Stakogber. And Drew,
what up?
It's the horror episode.
You're gonna be playing these things the whole time.
Not the whole time. No, I'm done. I'm done.
That's a lie.
That one's Mark the Goblin.
Sounds what?
I was expecting more of a hee-hee-hee type of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
How about this one?
That was weird.
One more time.
Did somebody burp?
That one's labeled orc.
It sounds like a yawn.
These all stink.
Whoa.
Watch out, Chris. There's a ghost somewhere.
Welcome to the horrible sound effects spectacular.
The horrible.
Horrible. Horrible. Yeah, we're doing a horror episode, Drew, because it's that time of year. It's October. It's Halloween. It's autumnal. It's horror movie time. And yes, Drew Stakogber, you were right. We have both said
on numerous occasions
that horror films are not our bag. Not our preferred genres. What would be your preferred genre? If you were going to be like, I'm going to watch a fucking movie. Let's watch a...
I like sci-fi.
Drew likes sci-fi. Man, I like sci-fi too a lot, quite actually.
I also like man? Animated.
Okay.
If you give me an animated sci-fi action-adventure movie...
Boom.
That's like my holy grail.
You're golden right there. I'm a westerns and kung fu kind of guy.
Yeah.
So Shanghai Noon was right up my alley.
Too bad it was so awful.
No, Shanghai Noon was awesome. Shanghai Nights is fucking awful. If you think Shanghai Noon was awful, no. Shanghai Noon was good. But as I've also said before, every time we talk about not liking a horror movie, we still like good movies, regardless of the genre.
Correct.
There are many fantastic horror films.
Sometimes I like bad movies, too.
Oh, yeah, sometimes. Oh, yeah, of course. No, but I'm talking about the genre in general, though. Even though a good majority of those movies are bad, I think you could say that about most genres. I mean, a large majority of movies just stink.
Correct.
Because so many of them get made.
Yes.
So many of them. They can't all be good. No. They can't even all be watchable, let alone good. Right?
Correct.
Horror.
Balance.
Horror is, and we'll get to why. We will get to it. But horror is known for being maybe the cheaper, worse genre than most other genres.
I think most of the worst movies I've seen, probably both in production and acting and all values, has definitely probably been horror. Also sci-fi. Some really bad sci-fi movies.
Oh yeah,
too.
Sure. But yeah, absolutely. Same from the same principle though. We're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to why that is, because we are going to start from the very beginning, and we're gonna talk about horror and how it's evolved, the horror genre, how it started and how it's evolved decade by decade. All the way up to current. And then at the end of the show, you got a top five?
I got a top five.
I got a top five. And we have two special top five lists from Cinema Crespo Diso, New York City show correspondent and senior horror film analyst, Billy D.
Wait, so they're junior horror film analysts?
Oh, well, he's going to round them up one day and intern them and, you know, tease their balls. Yes, Billy D gave us a couple of very special lists that we're going to go over at the end of the show. I haven't looked at them yet.
Nice.
I have no idea what's on them. Looking forward to breaking them open.
It's going
to
be fun.
With you all. This is going to be a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and get this started. Without further ado, Kevin, if you don't mind coming over, and can you introduce us really quick, buddy? Yeah, grab that mic right there. Okay, here we go. Thanks, Kevin.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Hi, thanks, dude. I guess I'll see you later.
Thanks, Kev.
Peace.
Peace out, brother. See you tomorrow.
He spends so
See you tomorrow for another episode of SBK Live.
He spends so much time driving here and then leaving.
Like, and he's been sitting here for the last hour.
And he says like 10 seconds worth of words, says, maybe.
Welcome to the Crestbone. Four words.
Four words.
And he's out of here. Well, thanks, Kevin. We appreciate it every time. He's a good guy. SBK Live. All right, so let us see here. Where are we gonna start exactly? You know where we're gonna start?
Don't they?
At the very beginning, Drew. What year was the first horror film on record released?
I don't know. When was the first camera made? Probably like 10 years after that. I don't know, like 1930.
1896.
Figures as much.
1896. The first horror film on record is a film called Le Manoir de Diable.
Something about the devil.
Something about the devil. And it's the first horror film on record, meaning it's the first one we know about that there's proof of.
No.
There could easily be a few before this. But 1896. There's a running time of a little over 3 minutes. And it includes things like bats, devils, witches, cauldrons, ghosts, trolls, all appearing and disappearing in puffs of smoke. Mm-hmm. Created by Georges Méliès, a.k.a. Sir Ben Kingsley in Martin Scorsese's Hugo.
Nice.
Did you ever see Hugo?
Yeah.
You did? The Ben Kingsley character, that filmmaker guy. He's the one who made the first horror film.
Nice.
With the cameras made by the Lumiere brothers, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, one of the first things they started making were horror films, and it was, you know, horror is the most base genre because it's dealing with your fears and stuff. So yeah. He's obviously, you know, I'm trying to freak people out. Here's some bats and devils witches. And stuff. But witches, ooh, scary, right? People were mad afraid of witches back then. They thought they were fucking real. So like, let's make movies about them and stuff. You know, just for pure entertainment values, and especially late 19th century up through almost up to World War One, you know, the Roaring Twenties and all that shit. Movies was a sideshow. It was a vaudeville act. It was seen at carnivals. You know, you walk up to the Nickelodeon and you put the money in and you turn the crank and you watch it. It's not like now where it's huge industry, prestige films, awards, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was
millions and millions of dollars.
Exactly. Back then, it was all just a bunch of pulp. Just to be tossed out there. So, you know, that's what it was for a while. Even though that's the first horror film, 1896, considered to be the first, like, real defining horror film, came out in 1919.
Okay.
Silent film era, obviously. This is before they could figure out how to add the sound. Mm-hmm. Add the sound to the talkies.
There's some dude playing piano next to the screen.
Yeah, it's like, quick, vamp. Yeah, exactly. You may know the title, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Nope.
You haven't heard that title? At least you haven't heard it? Dr. Caligari? No? There's a moment in Only Lovers Left Alive where Jeffrey Rush calls, what's his name? Adam?
Mm-hmm.
He calls him Dr. Caligari.
Nice.
1919, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari came out. It's considered granddaddy of all horror films. It's about... That has an interesting summation. It's about the mind of a madman in which an evil doctor is pitted against a hero falsely incarcerated in an insane asylum. Through a clever framing device, the audience is never quite clear as to who is mad and who is sane. So it's all about perception, POV, you know, trickery, mm-hmm. things that we, you know, take for granted in movies today. Because of the style of the movie, it was very German expressionistic and stuff. Heavy use of light and shadows, mm-hmm. a lot of darkness in there. It's kind of the template for many horror films to come. Another film came out in 1915 called The Golem.
The Golem.
Which I found it interesting because it's about a Jewish statue, a golem that like comes to life or whatever. I found that interesting because it was used in... What's the book I read? A Michael Chabon book? Mm-hmm. Michael Chabon? The Adventures... Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is really about the comic book industry of the 30s, 40s, 50s. But the first character that this Jewish kid came up with, was a golem. It was a golem superhero, which is kind of
interesting,
kind of weird. And then that's kind of like a sort of like a a magic monster movie type of thing, a precursor to that. 1922, Nosferatu came out.
Nah, that I am familiar with.
The very first vampire film. No. Pretty much a ripoff of the Dracula story.
Of course.
And so much so that the people who made Nosferatu were sued by the Dracula, the Bram Stoker estate, and it was all in litigation and shit, and they had a lot of problems. Nosferatu was remade in the 70s by Werner Herzog.
Really?
Playing the Nosferatu Max Schreck role, the vampire role, Klaus Kinski.
Huh.
And then in 2001, a movie was made called Shadow of the Vampire. And that movie is like a made up, like, what if this is how the movie was made? Imagine that the director of Nosferatu, he found this guy who actually was a vampire.
Oh, okay.
And then filmed him. The director, played by John Malkovich, the vampire, Willem Dafoe. I may be getting that backwards. I'm pretty sure it's correct, though. Willem Dafoe. He seems more vampire-y than, than Malkovich. But yeah, Nosferatu, very influential. And also, creepy, if you watch it, if you check it out, just like certain shots, you know, the way it's presented, and it, obviously it's old film, so it was pretty creepy, just naturally. But then shortly after the 20s, starting right into the 30s, they added that sound. Now we got the talkies.
And the screamies.
The screamies. Added the screamies. Screams are very, very important to a horror film, right? Yeah. A lot of screaming going on in horror films. In the 30s is when Universal Pictures is when they stepped up with all the monsters.
Okay.
Right? They went monster crazy. Yeah. So we got both Dracula and Frankenstein in 1931. Dracula was Bela Lugosi. Frankenstein was Boris Karloff. Mm-hmm. And then both those guys went on to do a whole bunch of other characters throughout the 30s and 40s. And that was their bread and butter for a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 32, Karloff did The Mummy. Also in 32, the guy who did Dracula, Todd Browning, he did Freaks. You ever see Freaks?
I don't think so.
Freaks is, what's this show? American Horror Story?
Yeah.
The current season, the sideshow season, mm-hmm. owes everything it's doing to Freaks.
Nice.
Freaks is, it's about
sideshow
people. About sideshow, about carnival people, and he used real people. Real sideshow people, some of them to the point where when the movie was, after it came out, some of them were like, felt exploited when they mm-hmm. saw the movie. You're like, oh, I didn't know this is what we were signing up for. I think the bearded lady sued him, you know, for real English bearded lady.
Yeah.
And when the movie came out, there was like pickets and protests, controversy, you know, because not only were some people were like, you're exploiting these people, other people were like, we just don't want to see this shit. This is fucking grotesque. You know, they weren't even looking at them as people. They're like, where are these monsters you're putting on the screen in front of us? A little more insensitive back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as far as we can tell, probably the first like highly controversial film to come out because of its subject matter. Although when Birth of a Nation came out, that was well received by half the country.
The other half, not so much.
The other not so racist half, not so much. You can tell which half I'm talking about. Not the northern half. After Freaks in 32, we had our first giant monster movie. You want to take a guess what giant monster that might be? Movie's been remade now 3 times with several spinoffs. Giant Beast, King Kong. Oh,
nice.
King Kong came out in 1933. Huge deal when that movie came out because it used a myriad of special effects and filming techniques that actually the guy who was behind all of it, when he died, a lot of those techniques like disappeared with him. And Peter Jackson actually went over this whole big thing trying to recreate all this stuff.
Nice.
And yeah, it was pretty. It's all on the special edition DVD for that King Kong. They put that King Kong DVD a few years ago. There's a special edition. So it's worth checking out. It's pretty cool.
Heard that. So King Kong's really a horror movie?
He's
a giant monster, I guess.
There are scenes when he's picking people up and he's eating them and he's stepping on people, and the music, if you listen to the music, it gets very bombastic.
I guess back in the day.
Also back in the day, think about it. What are the horror movies of the time? Yeah, Dracula, exactly. Frankenstein, The Mummy. They're still discovering what horror is cinematically.
No.
And King Kong's the first giant monster movie, for sure. Predates all other giant monsters. And it's not just King Kong, because that movie includes dinosaurs, like two or three dinosaurs, a giant snake. It had a cutout spider pit sequence that was...
Giant spiders?
Giant spiders. Whoa. And then Peter Jackson did it in his movie.
Yeah, he did.
In his version. Bride of Frankenstein came out in 1935. That's when Universal realized, hey, people love these horror movies. Let's sequelize them. People complain now about sequels and prequels and remakes. The industry started with that.
It's been going on forever.
Since the beginning. They've been eating their children from day one. Here we go. Special horror Crespedisto edition. This one's a little different. Here we go.
Goddamn.
Here is a list. You have a list there of 10 directors.
Okay.
Go ahead and read out the names of the directors so people know what your options are.
David Cronenberg, John Carpenter, Alfred Hitchcock, Toby Hooper, Guillermo del Toro, George Romero, Dario Argento, Wes Craven, David Lynch, Sam Raimi.
Okay, I have a list here. I have three. I'm going to give you three movies. You tell me which of those directors made these movies.
All three of them.
Yeah, all three of them. So you got, actually, a list there in front of you.
Yeah.
I expect you to do pretty well. Here we go. Number one. Who made Eraserhead, Lost Highway, and Inland Empire?
Lynch.
Correct. Number two. Who made The Crazies, Monkey Shines, and Day of the Dead?
Romero.
Correct. Number three, who made Shivers, Dead Ringers, The Fly?
Cronenberg.
Correct. Number four, who made The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, Suspiria, Inferno?
Toby Hooper.
Ah, Dario Argento. Which director made The Fog, The Prince of Darkness, In the Mouth of Madness?
Hitchcock?
No. Ooh, John Carpenter.
I guess The Fog's the only one I saw.
The one with the pirates? Not too good. Not good. Prince of Darkness is pretty good. Mouth of Madness, a lot of fun. Number six. Who made The Birds, Rear Window, and Vertigo?
Hitchcock.
All right. Back on track. Number seven. Who made The Last House on the Left, The Hills Have Eyes, A Nightmare on Elm Street? All three of those remade in the last 15 years.
And Nightmare. Wes Craven.
Very good. Who made Kronos, The Devil's Backbone, and Pan's Labyrinth?
Del Toro.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of easy. Which director made The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist, and Life Force?
Sam Raimi?
No, that would be Toby Hooper. And number 10, who made Drag Me to Hell, The Evil Dead, and Army of Darkness?
Sam Raimi.
It's interesting when you see which directors made which movies, and you say, these movies all have similarities to them. I can see how the same person was behind all of these.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of interesting. Oh, well, again, that's the auteur theory. Even though movies are products of sometimes crews of hundreds of people, there is one person behind it all. So, in the 30s was all about the monster movie. Universal was king in the 30s. They made all the monsters that we know now. Dracula, the Mummy, Bride of Frankenstein, etc. In the 1940s, World War II had taken its toll.
Yes, lots of people died.
And lots of people died, and that was the emergence of the Wolfman in the 40s.
Oh, okay.
The timing of this, the Wolfman emergence in the 40s, Adolf Hitler. Uh-huh. Adolf means noble wolf in German. He used Airwolf as a pseudonym early on in his political career. And different factions of the Nazi party, the Nazi government, all had wolf in their name. Like the Wolf's Gulch, or the Man-Wolf, or the Wolf's Lair in East Prussia.
Okay.
The Wolfschanzen, something like that. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Horrible Nazi speak is what I'm saying.
Yes.
So, we have the Wolfman, coming out.
After World War II.
After World War II, 1941. Well, actually, during World War II, because World War II hadn't even ended yet. 1941, The Wolfman. 1943, Frankenstein meets The Wolfman.
Ah,
so now we got
team
that.
Ups.
Team up crossover stuff. I'm blaming Avengers for all this cinematic universe bullshit that we have to sit through now.
Yes.
Universal beat them to it 80 years ago.
No.
44. Now, this is interesting. So you had the whole wolf thing going on in the 40s. That was the bringing on of the wolves, thanks to good old Adolf Hitler. Because up to that point, there was no... I mean, werewolves were in folklore, mm-hmm. but there was no werewolf tale. They're like, you had the Dracula story.
Yeah.
You had the Frankenstein monster story. All of these... You have the set story.
Yeah, there's no real origin story for the wolfman. It's just you get bit by a werewolf. Where did the first werewolf come from? Who knows?
Who knows? Exactly. That's why now, that's why the Wolfman is so influential, because that kind of laid the groundwork for, this is the werewolf story. Here's the basic werewolf story that then people have just adopted from that point forward. And then Universal started eating itself. And things started going bad for the rest of the 40s. It started with House of Frankenstein in 44. And
a lot of Frankensteins? Frankenstein kid?
See, that sounds like fun, but no, not that cool. Neither was House of Dracula in 45. It was just more like about the descendants of each, family thing.
Oh, okay. So, wait. So,
and
old man Frankenstein monster?
No, I think it's like the younger Frankenstein, or I don't know. Do know that the Wolfman popped up in, I think, both of those movies.
Okay.
And that's when the monsters started popping up in each other's movies and stuff. By the time 1948 rolled around and they were doing Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, it was over. It was done. They were like, people aren't coming to see these anymore. They're not making that much money. We've beat them into the ground. So they put the monsters to bed for a little while. In the 50s, they did Creature from the Black Lagoon, but it was a while before they got back to all those guys. Yeah. Now, they're doing that shit now with the monsters all over again. And the person that they gave it to, it's like, here, spearhead all our monster stuff. He's like, yeah, I'm doing the same thing where they're all crisscrossing and they're going to be each other's movies and shit. And
that sounds awful.
Yeah, it does. 1950s. Now we're talking post World War II, Cold War, post atom bomb.
Yes.
All right. That's when we got pretty interesting. That was the explosion of the monster genre in the 50s, post atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Godzilla.
Yes.
Was a direct result of
the atomic bomb being dropped.
Right. Attack of the 50-foot woman.
Yeah.
Them, which I think is giant ants. There's also...
Everything's giant and radioactive.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all from crazy experiments, right? And then they also kind of did the opposite, where things were shrinking because of crazy science, mm-hmm. like the original The Fly, Incredible Shrinking Man. So that was hot for a while.
Yeah.
Because of, because that's what it is. I mean, the movies, it's easy when you look back, too, to see. It's hard when you're in the moment, but you can look back and you have perspective. You can see how the culture at the time was shaping the art of the era. So, you had all that post-war, post-bomb stuff. Plus, you had McCarthyism, Red Scare, rooting out communists.
Hooray.
So, you have stuff like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and things like that, where instead of, monsters being the bad guy, it's people. But people that are like other people, otherworldly people. Yes, exactly. Also, getting big in the 50s, Ray Harryhausen did a lot of work. He's known for doing some of the best stop-motion effects work ever. Jason and Argonauts is his. It came from Beneath the Sea. Clash of the Titans, all the crazy stuff in that movie. He did that. And then here, what we were talking about earlier. The reason why horror films became so cheap and they were just cranking them out to make a buck. By the mid to late 50s, like I said, the Universal monsters, they were done. They had played themselves out. Studios realized that they could crank out really schlocky, really cheap horror films, and they would be the B movie of a double feature.
Yeah.
So they put all their money into the A movie, and then they would crank out some piece of shit, make it the B movie, double features at drive-ins, specifically at drive-ins, to lure in the teenagers. That's why they didn't care if the movie was good, they didn't put any money into them, because it was just product.
Here, somebody watch this.
Here's some shit. That's how you end up with something like I Was a Teenage Frankenstein, which was produced by American International Pictures, which is kind of the spearhead. The people who really started that shit at that time were those people. And that lasted through the 70s. They were cranking out crap like that, and then in the 80s it turned to VHS.
Yeah.
You know, what did they call that?
God.
That had a specific name. I'm sure we'll get to it. That gave way to the 60s. 60s was a crazy time in this country. We're talking civil rights. We're talking assassination of JFK, walking on the moon, Martin Luther King, marching, desegregation. A lot of insane shit happening in the 60s in this country. That led way to, gave way to, like, psycho-type pictures, or literally Psycho, which came out in 1960. Manson Family, all that shit happened in 69.
Yeah.
And between all that, there's a whole bunch of crazy movies. This is also when Hitchcock was hitting his stride. Psycho was 60. The Birds was 63. The first splatter film came out in 63.
Oh, nice.
Called Blood Feast.
Blood Feast.
We all Blood Feast. It's this fella who was a known pornographer at the time. Herschel Gordon Lewis. He is a legend in the horror community because of this. Because in the 60s, he started the gore film. You know, movies with literally with buckets of blood.
Yeah, buckets of corn
syrup. I even think he made a movie called Buckets of blood. I'm pretty sure he did. And it was just, you know, body parts and just grossness, especially for that time.
Yeah.
You know, now we see and we're like, oh, the effects look obviously fake, you know, because it was fucking 1963. But at the time, people were like, what the fuck? This guy is blowing our minds. For example, the movie Blood Feast, which came out in 63, cost $24,000 to make.
And how much
At that time was still a good chunk of change. And it grossed over $4 million in 1963. That's a fucking huge hit. And it was like, back in 63, there was only like 3 movie theaters in the entire country.
Yeah.
So, good job, those guys. And now, at the same time, across the pond, all this, we're talking about Hollywood. In the 60s, across the pond, over there in the UK, shout out to our UK listeners. That was the birth of Hammer horror. I am not talking about Parachute Pants.
Okay.
Can't touch this. I should have had that sound drop queued up.
Can't touch this.
But there was a company called Hammer Films, which they went out of business for a while, and then they have actually come back pretty recently, within the last like 5 or 6 years. Hammer Films came out. Actually, they were founded in 1934, but in the 1960s, they were like, this is what we're going to do. We are going to make our own horror films, and we're going to put our own spin on them. So they were making their own Draculas, their own monster movies, just like Universal used to do, but they were, you know, adding a little bit of that Herschel Gordon Lewis blood, a little bit of a sex appeal, you know, trying to really sensationalize it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. That was where Christopher Lee made his name. He was the Hammer Dracula.
Nice.
So if you want to check out some awesome Christopher Lee, go back and check out the Hammer Dracula films, and you got a young, seductive Christopher Lee trying to bite some necks. And also, thanks to those films in the 60s, the British version of the censorship board of the MPAA, well, their actual censorship board, that is what the MPAA has become. They came up with the X certificate, X rating.
Thank you, guys. It's the greatest rating ever.
Specifically for these movies. And Hammer, when they made their films, they shot for the X.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're making. And then in 1967, this little movie called Night of the Living Dead came out. And zombies were born. Exactly. Before that, there were zombie movies. Movies like White Zombie. Again, like I said, I was a teenage Frankenstein. I think there was like an I Was a Teenage Zombie, too. And those were zombie movies where just they're not the zombies that brain-eating, undead. Yeah. You know, it's not that stuff. They were just hokier. Romero took Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, his vampire book, and he took those habits of those creatures, which even then wasn't like traditional vampires, and he was like, oh, the undeadedness and the stalking and all of that. He made the zombie monster. The rest was literally history.
Yes.
Because it's all in the past. Movie cost him $114,000 to make.
Wow. Actually, that's... I would have thought it would cost...
Yeah?
A little bit more than that.
100? Well... One location, just not two locations, a house and a cemetery. You shoot the cemetery stuff on the fly. six or seven people. I don't know. Don't got to feed them that much, right?
I don't know. It depends on how long you film for.
How long you film for, exactly. 6 months, I think, it says here. Anyway. So that's the end of the 60s. Leads us to the 70s, which for some reason became the year everyone became scared of children and of their own family members.
Sweet.
It's kind of weird, but if you think about it this way, in 73, you had The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie.
Yep.
In which the devil's infected a woman's daughter, right? 75, you had Stepford Wives.
Okay.
Which is all about, you know, men turning their women into robot, subservient robot slaves. 76, you have Carrie.
Okay.
And also, The Omen.
Oh, man.
So something was going on. Something was in the
air, cultural psyche.
In the cultural psyche, where people were not trusting each other or their own children. They were seeing their children as like, this is terror.
This thing is
going to
kill me.
This thing is going to kill me. But then something else really interesting happened in the 70s when it comes to horror films. The people that were watching the movies of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, those people became adults. And they became filmmakers who wanted to make horror movies. So that's when you have a new crop of horror films, a new crop of directors, and it's almost like the genre takes a bit of a jump. I mean, you have Night of the Living Dead. You have The Exorcist, which is fantastic, right? But then in 74, you get The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Toby Hooper. Right next year in 75, you got Jaws.
Yeah.
Giant shark terrorizing a town.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you don't see it so much as a horror film now, but at the time, that movie made people afraid of the water.
Oh, yeah.
And then 78, Halloween.
Michael Myers.
So you got people like Tobe Hooper, Steven Spielberg, John Carpenter, all coming of age around the same time and all pulling from the same influences, come out with different things, and it's all stuff that's the next level. Next level up. It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like that he saw Blood Feast, and then like some other movies, like, oh, I can combine all this stuff and really fucking push it, push that envelope, you know? And that's why I haven't seen insane classics like that. And then you get to my favorite time period for horror films.
The 80s.
Early 80s specifically. Early to mid 80s. That's when it's described as a watershed moment in the horror genre. Because that's when special effects got to a point where people could really do whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Latex, blood, pneumatics, transformations, things like that. That's how you get something like, what year? I don't think I have the year for that. This might have been late 70s. You have American Werewolf in London,
mm-hmm.
right? And Alien in 79. The Shining in 1980. Not too many special effects, and I want to point out that came out in 1980. Yeah. The Thing in 82. Videodrome in 83. The Fly in 86. And those are like just the cream of the crop. Around all those, tons of other extremely gory, crazy, insane movies featuring lots of just insane special effects, yeah. which were just recently possible. Stuff they couldn't do 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Video nasties is the thing I was trying to think of. When instead of producing super schlocky stuff for the drive-in theater, they started producing them for VHS films.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, you went to a Blockbuster and there was just
so much.
So many horror. Like, where did all these horror movies come from? Those were video nasties. All
right.
That's where that came from. And that, you know, not all video nasties were ended up being bad. Because that was, it includes movies like I Spit on Your Grave,
uh-huh.
which is a classic. Last House on the Left.
Yeah.
Wes Craven's Last House on the Left, which was remade. And The Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Because awesome. that was made on the super, super cheap.
Of course it was.
Oh, but it's so good. Evil Dead 2 is even better. Army of Darkness is so weird.
I love it.
So, so weird. 1984, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Freddy.
That's some insane shit right there. Insane special effects.
Don't go to sleep.
And then when he got to the mid to late 80s, serial killers started getting to play, right? He had the first Hannibal Lecter movie, Manhunter, in 86. Also that same year, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, Drew. Talk about a movie you won't forget. That's going to stick with you. I saw Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. I think the only way a person should see it, I saw it. It was dubbed onto another VHS.
Yeah.
And and I watched it alone. And when it was over, I was like, I need sunshine. I need a shower. I need sunshine, and I need to hug a puppy
right now.
Maybe a put a couple of kittens like in a blanket and then just squeeze them. Oh, you're so cute. Because Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer will fuck you up. It will fuck up your day because it seems so real.
Yeah,
so like so intense, so vital. You know, it's like this is something that's really. Like, these people are real. This is really fucking happening. Henry, the lead character, is played by Michael Rooker, okay. who we all know is genuinely insane. Supposed to be a very nice guy. Very nice guy. He's like Henry, portrait of a serial killer, if Henry was nicer. Yeah. If he didn't have murderous tendencies. I still suspect Rooker might have murderous tendencies, partly because of this fucking movie. It's so crazy. I'm pretty sure it's still in the Netflix Instant. It was a Netflix Instant pick long ago.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it might still be on there. Also in 86. 86 was a fucked up year for crazy people. Rutger Hauer in The Hitcher. You ever see that with C. Thomas Howell?
Nope.
C. Thomas Howell's driving along with his buddy. I forgot who the person was. And they pick up a hitchhiker, and it's fucking Rutger Hauer.
Worst idea ever.
They remade it a few years ago with Sean Bean. Do you remember the remake that came out? Like, I definitely didn't see that one.
Did Sean Bean die?
Yeah, of course. It's a Sean Bean movie. Okay.
Just wanted to make sure.
What kind of question is that? 88. We have kind of a combination because we have a serial killer, but we also have a demonic type thing. When Brad Dourif plays some sort of a serial killer with a voodoo knowledge, because when he dies at the beginning, he grabs a nearby child's doll, says a voodoo incantation, his spirit goes into the doll. You have
Chucky.
Child's Play, 1988. I've never seen all of Child's Play 2 through whatever.
I don't think so. I have
all the sequels. Never even bothered with them. But I've seen the original.
And then there was Bride of Chucky.
Bride of Chucky. See the Chucky.
So weird.
They just did a new Chucky a year ago. That was like direct to video, direct to on demand.
Sounds awful.
And it had a CG Chucky.
Oh
yeah. So fuck those guys. And then the serial killer thing. It really went into the 90s. Check out this list of serial killer movies. 1991. Silence. Of the Lambs. Again, Hannibal Lecter is back. You know, Anthony Hopkins in that movie, Hannibal Lecter, is in it for about 8 minutes.
Yeah, but it's a memorable fucking 8 minutes.
That's how you do it, man. It's amazing how often that happens. William Hurt in History of Violence, he's in that for 10. Best Supporting Actor. So did Anthony Hopkins for Silence of the Lambs. Godzilla, 8 minutes in Godzilla. 1992, French-Belgium movie Man Bites Dog. You ever see that one?
I think so.
On the cover is a picture of a dude like shooting a gun directly into a child's stroller.
Familiar for some reason.
It's a crazy movie. It's like a mockumentary, fake documentary type thing. A documentary crew follows around a serial killer during his day, and he's just like
Doing crazy stuff.
Dario Argento put out a movie called Trauma. Man, that was hard to say for some reason. Trauma in 1993. It's because I don't have a beer. That's why I'm not drinking. California came out in 93, right? Brad Pitt. 94, written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Oliver Stone, starring Woody Harrelson, Juliette Lewis.
Natural Born Killers.
Very controversial movie when it came out, probably because a lot of it was speaking the truth.
Yeah.
95, the serial killer movie, and that kind of changed movies for a while. Seven.
Yeah.
Because after Seven, for the next 4 or 5 years, every movie had to have a creepy opening credit sequence.
Yeah, it had to have a twist.
It had to have a twist, and half the movie had to be rating.
Yeah.
Yeah. 95, not a good movie, but still keeping with the theme, Copycat.
Yeah, it was awful.
I did like, what's his name, though? Harry Connick Jr.?
Really?
He's good. He's got it. He has it. Just because he's in bad movies, though.
Like Dolphin Tale?
Yeah, exactly. If he was killing people in Dolphin Tale, I might give it a shot. And then I'll go ahead and end the 2000s with, probably the best serial killer movie to come out since this time, American Psycho.
Oh, that movie's so good.
Yeah, that's an insane movie. Insane movie. Bret Easton Ellis doesn't like it, the guy who wrote the book.
Really?
But he's also a bit of a psycho himself.
I always, now that Christian Bale has been Batman. Now I just think of American Psycho. It's like he's just playing Bruce Wayne. That's all.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Bruce Wayne does.
Bruce Wayne, if he never had Batman as an outlet,
mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Now, brewing in the 90s also, there was that thing. It was really started with Scream in 96. But before that, Wes Craven did Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which was, you know, we're making a Freddy movie.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's coming to life on the set. And apparently they had to make Freddy movies because as long as they made him, they were keeping him from coming into the real world. Some meta type shit like that. And they followed up with Scream in 96, which was super meta. People are like, here are the rules of horror movies. They say it out loud, and then they subvert all those rules. It's cool. It's fun. I mean, by the time you get to Scream 4, again, it's a case of them eating the house eating itself, right? You know, but still,
Scream. Scream was, at the time, was fucking awesome.
It was great. It was great. But then that led to a kind of unfortunate trend in horror films because it did feature younger people and it was big with the teenagers. So like, oh, we got to make horror films for teenagers. I don't know what you did last summer. You know, any horror movie with Jennifer
Love Hewitt.
No. Just no.
Jennifer McTitties.
And with the release of Ouija last week, we see that's still happening. That's still going on. So thanks a lot, Scream. You may have had great intentions in the beginning, but you've unleashed a hell upon us.
Yes.
With just some of the worst movies. The Final Destination movies, it's like, that one I kind of go down the middle on, because they are aiming for them teenagers.
It's just people dying.
But it ends just people dying, but it's still kind of a fun idea.
Yeah.
It's kind of stupid, though. The Faculty, Robert Rodriguez directed that one, which is like, And then if you watch it, there are things in the movie that are cool, like, oh, that's straight up, like, he does things like, that's straight up fucking, like, John Carpenter 80s crazy shit, but then it's surrounded by a movie with teenagers, and it's in high school, and it's kind of invasion of the body snatchers.
Whatever weird drug they're snorting up their nose.
Yeah, that was...
And they're aliens, not really...
It does feel
else.
Like very much a product of its time when you look back on it now, you know. Early 2000s. Yeah, The Ring.
Yes, that was creepy as fuck.
Creepy as fuck.
It's that weird, creepy Asian stuff.
Yes, well, I was going to say, that led to a maybe a 6 or 7 year run of Japanese horror movies being remade into American films. So you had, it started with The Ring, then you had The Grudge, then you had the guy who made The Ring, the Japanese guy who made Ringu, they had him do Dark Water, a remake of his own movie with Jennifer Connelly. They did like 2 or 3 Grudges, and then they did a Ring sequel, I think, didn't they? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
What else? There, off the top of my head, there were a few more. There were a few more that they did. One Missed Call. Remember that one?
Yeah.
The cell phone one? The original Japanese one was directed by Takashi Miike.
Oh,
which
that
was
man.
That was him doing his version of a mainstream movie. Like, the studio's like, oh, we have this script. We have this one Missed Call script. We need someone to make it, and someone wants a Miyake, and he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. So he wasn't trying to make something that crazy. Although there's still some crazy things in it.
Well, it's because it's Miyake. Because
it's Miyake. He can't help it. When he sees, like, on the page, it's like, oh, crazy hair monster, I can do that. I can nail that one.
And it has to be somebody with severed limbs somewhere.
Was there any? Yes, there is. You know what happens? Someone gets hit by a train, I think, and their arm comes off. And then there's a shot, like the camera pans over, and it pans over into the guy's. You see the severed arm on the ground, and he's still holding the cell phone in his hand. And then the severed hand starts dialing.
Sounds like Miyake.
Yeah, calling his next victim or whatever. So that was fun. And then they remade that, and it was terrible. There was a film called Cairo, K-A-I-R-O, which is doesn't make that much sense, but I watched it once, like, in my room on my computer with headphones on and the lights off. And
Pretty scary.
When the movie was over, I wouldn't say scary. It definitely...
Unnerving?
Yes, unnerving is a great word for it. And then they remade it into a movie called Pulse, because that's what the word translated to, with Sam Levine and, I think, Kristen Bell. And I saw that in a gigantic empty theater with my brother, and it was just bad. And that was almost the same story.
Yeah.
Almost the exact same story, same style. Had the big same money shot at the end.
Still.
I was like, oh, what the fuck, guys? Nothing. Why? So, yeah, PG-13, The Ring, Gore Verbinski. I think that might be the best PG-13 horror film. It's either that or I would say that followed by Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, Drag Me to Hell is fun.
It's a fun... That one's fun. Yeah. And they're both PG-13. And there's a lot you can't do in a PG-13. But they still... On Drag Me to Hell, they got away with some things. And then you had the unfortunate... I found unfortunate trend of... Which... I don't agree with the use of this term, but when I say it, everyone knows what I'm talking about. The quote, torture porn
yeah.
movies.
Saw and...
The Saw movies.
Blah, blah, blah.
What else he got? He got the Hostel movies.
Yeah.
Right? Anything where it seems like people are just being mutilated and tortured without any real chance of escaping.
Yeah.
Because they at least have a chance to escape. if there's no chance, they're just... If you just have someone tied up and you just cut them until they die, that's no fun. That's snuff. That's gross.
Yeah.
You know? But when was the last one? Has there really been any movies like that lately?
But
that kind of style
that
movie?
That what's the one about the green or something that's supposed to come out?
Oh, Eli Roth's Green Inferno? Yeah. He's making a cannibal movie.
That,
you know?
No.
Kind of a shame that we were talking about horror films. I didn't talk about cannibal movies. 1970-something? 76? I don't know. But it's 1975, give or take 5 years. This movie came out called Cannibal Holocaust. Yeah. And it was a Italian film by this guy. His last name was like Diodato. And that one's like the original found footage type movie, because it's movie starts like, oh, we found this footage of a documentary crew that went into the jungles of South America. They disappeared. We found the footage. Here you go. And between clips of the footage, like people talking and trying to pretend it's all real. And then they cut to the footage and it's missionary people and they're with a tribe, like an Amazonian tribe. And they're cutting them up and they're eating them and they're cooking them. And it's straight up cannibals. Yeah. When the movie came out, because it was the 70s.
People probably thought it was real.
People thought it was fucking real. The director was brought up on not just obscenity charges. He was brought up on murder charges by the Italian government. They tried him, found innocent, because he was like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I present to you the cast.
Yeah.
And they all walk in and they're like, it's a movie. And they're like, okay, you're free to go, I guess. But yeah, that shit was crazy. So Green Inferno is kind of like Eli Roth's, you know, I'm going to go and do the same thing. I'm going to fucking make a cannibal movie.
Yeah.
He claims, and I don't know how much you can believe this. I mean, I guess you can believe it, that they went into, South America, they went into the Amazon. And first they found out how deep Werner Herzog went into the Amazon for Fitzcarraldo and for Aguirre, Wrath of God. And he's like, we're going further.
What?
So they went even deeper, and then they found a tribe of people down there who, like,
No idea what's going on.
They didn't know what a movie was. They'd never seen a camera before, but they somehow found a way to convince these people. It's like, told them what acting is and what they do, and they got them to do a movie. And they said that they loved doing it, that they really enjoyed pretending to eat shit and, you know, be all crazy and stuff. And they said also during the filming of the movie at one point, they were trying to film a scene, and then they heard, like, some singing. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And coming down the river on a boat, a bunch of missionaries. They just rolled up on them, and they're like, they were there to find people in the jungle to convert them to the Lord.
Scary.
Yeah, yeah. The true horror. Anyway. So yeah, that's, I guess, but you know what? That was supposed to come out the end of September.
Was it?
Yeah.
Never did.
Nope. It got pushed with no release date announced.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I wonder why. So yeah, that's a torture porn thing. And then now it seems like the last few years, the big thing has been hauntings. We've been getting a lot of Conjuring, Annabelle, stuff like that.
Haunting.
Insidious. Yeah, it's all Paranormal Activity. It's all haunted houses, haunted people, haunted items, things like that. I wonder what that's all about. I wonder what that says about this time period that we're going to see, that we'll be able to look back in 10 years.
Like, oh, that's what it was.
Oh, it's all because of the oil crisis. You know, or something
sure.
like that, you know? But there will be something, though. It's pretty fascinating how that works out. So that brings us to today. That's where we're at now with all them horror movies. And there's so much that we haven't touched on. But you know what? It's a free podcast. So we each have top fives. Drew, let's go ahead and let's hear your top five. What do you got? What are your five favorite horror films? And
you want some reasoning behind them too? Maybe?
Oh yeah, yeah, sure, absolutely. Tell me, give me a little bit of the why.
Well, my number five
mm-hmm.
is the 2001 classic,
mm-hmm.
Jason X.
Oh man, really?
Jason, it's I like it because it's the most ridiculous horror movie ever. I mean, it's Jason in space.
Yeah.
He becomes a cyborg in the 25th century.
I would somehow say cyborg Jason in space is indeed more insane than Leprechaun in space.
Yes.
Because that happened.
David Cronenberg plays Dr. Wimmer in the
yep.
movie.
Yep.
I mean, it kind of makes fun of itself. I mean, at one point in time, they're in like some sort of virtual reality thing, and Jason is picking it is. He beats one girl in a sleeping bag to death with another girl in a sleeping bag.
yeah.
And it's stuff like that. It just, you know, it sticks in my head.
Some of those Friday the 13th movies definitely vary in qualities. To say any of them are good is an overstatement.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's an awful movie.
Every single one of them are bad, but they have different levels of badness and goodness.
And the only
that
time
definitely I would put Jason X up there.
The only time I ever saw it was Aaron had a VHS copy.
You talking about that Ron B. Long Beach Englewood?
Yes, sir. He had a VHS copy. I think we watched it at his place one night.
There you go. He probably watched it. Just Cause Cronenberg was in it.
Say what?
Just Cause Cronenberg was in it.
Probably.
I bet you that's why. Ron B. Shout out to Ron B.
Long Beach Englewood.
All right. So what's your number four?
Number four is from 1997.
Okay.
Kind of a sci-fi movie.
Okay.
Real horrible ending.
Horrible as in like
just awful.
It's
the whole movie is great until you get to the end.
Oh, it's a bad ending. Not like it fucks with you.
No.
Okay. What were we talking about?
Event Horizon.
Oh, Event Horizon. Yes.
That movie is scary as hell.
The movie, yeah, the first like hour of that movie is tense. It's all.
It's so. I saw.
It's all static shots and.
I
like,
saw it in theaters and I was like looking behind me. I was like, "There's something.
There's
the fuck there
are things
going on."
I would like this to go to a screening of that movie in a theater. I would like to be able to see it on the big screen because yeah. I never saw it in a theater. I only saw it
until you get to the end. It's just like, ugh.
Yeah,
it
gets
not scary.
It gets really too when he turns like that monster guy. Yeah. It's kind of a lot like the end of the Sunshine,
mm-hmm.
where the dude's like, "Oh, I'm changed by space.
Yeah.
This is terrible." Yeah,
yeah, but in Event Horizon, it's no. This is a portal to hell. Welcome to hell.
Yeah, but
hell.
They didn't even really go there though.
Like, kind of.
It's like it's the portal. Can you go through the portal? Can things come through the portal? You never.
Right.
We'll never know. Now that movie, I do know for a fact that's a Paul Wet Shit Anderson movie,
yes.
who went on to make such classics as Mortal Kombat, Resident Evil 1, 2, and like 5, Soldier, just some of the worst movies ever. But, like we're saying, that movie does have many great moments. It has a lot going for it. I do know for a fact that he made that for Fox. They were like, here, make us this R-rated horror film. He made it. They showed it to test audiences. The note cards came back saying, this movie is terrifying as fuck. And Fox was like, you have to make this movie less scary.
Because, dude, the movie was terrifying as fuck.
And Anderson's like, it's a horror movie. It's supposed to fucking freak people out. We can't cut shit out of here. We can't change things. I was like, no, you have to chop shit out. They made him cut out like 20 minutes of that movie.
Oh, man. Maybe, so it could have been 20 minutes scarier.
It could have been 20 minutes scarier. Maybe that stuff would have, like, help the ending make more sense.
No.
It would have been instead of just a terrible ending. I'm like, yeah, a slightly better ending.
No.
You know, I don't know. It's fucked up what Fox did to that movie. I don't think he never recovered from that point because every movie he made after that, complete shit,
no.
complete shit, which is a shame because that, yeah,
that movie was fucking, yeah, it was scary.
Makes me want to watch
it. Really scary.
I like putting it on. All right, here we go. What do you got? We're on number three.
Number three from 1999. Directed by Takeshi Miike.
Ah, Miike. Yes, the sucks Miike.
Audition.
Oh, Audition. O-D-I-S-H-O-N. That's not on the Netflix instant.
No. I can't believe that they let people just walk into that movie.
Yeah.
Like just without
turn it on.
Yeah. Like, hey, Audition, Japanese. Yeah, let's watch it.
It'd be fucked up if they had it listed under like romantic comedy. Which it is.
It kind of is.
Half hour.
Yeah.
First
yeah,
half hour, 40 minutes.
Is.
That's a romantic comedy.
Sure.
Until the bag moves by itself. I know for a fact it was on a Netflix instant for a while. It's not on there now, but you know Netflix, they take things on and off, so they could put it back anytime. And when they do,
watch out.
Brace yourself. Brace yourself.
Watch out.
I've only seen it once, and I remember it very well.
Skinnabun.
That wasn't that movie.
Which one was that?
Skinnabun was Suicide Club.
Oh, God.
This movie was horrible enough.
It
didn't need a Skinnabun.
No, it didn't.
You got the with the wire taken off the foot and the tongue in the stairwell that's just moving on its own. And
yep.
The limbless guy in the bag. And,
yep.
and he flops out of the bag.
What is with Miike and limbless people?
That's probably one of his fears.
I mean,
it probably speaks to some deep-seated fear he doesn't even realize he has.
Even in 13 Assassins,
yes.
which is like just a straight up fucking samurai revenge
movie.
Samurai movie. It just all of a sudden
one scene.
What the fuck? It's like why?
Why do we have Torso Man? Why do we have to look at Torso Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Miyake's a weird guy. He's a weird guy. I think that you would pick out. I think that would be the one that I would choose of all his movies, although I'm a big fan of...
Well, it's the only one that I've... Well, that and Visitor Q, the only ones I've only watched once and probably refused to watch
again. And don't need to watch again. Yeah. Well, no, I think I
saw Ichi... for some reason, I've watched Ichi the Killer like two or three times.
I think I've seen that one twice. What's the other one? There's another one he made. Not Ichi the Killer. Another one around that same time that's even crazier. I can't remember. Gozu is a really good one, which has a lot of his movies are like a mixture of genres. So like Gozu is a Yakuza film, but it has horror elements. Like when a guy walks into a hotel room and there's a dude with a giant like cow head and the music's all crazy. You're like, what the fuck is going on? This is weirding me out. But then the rest of the movie is like kind of a weird Yakuza thing, you know? Huge fan of Miyake though. He's fucking fantastic. Audition's a great choice.
Oh man. Do you know what the tagline of Audition is?
No.
She always gets a part.
Oh my god. So many meetings. Which part? She gets whatever part she wants.
Whatever one she wants. Yowzer.
Just saying, gentlemen, be careful what lady you take home.
Yeah, oh, it she might not be what you think she is.
Might not be what you think. All right, what's your number two?
Vagina Stomach.
Vagina Stomach. I love a Vagina Stomach.
Videodrome.
Videodrome. David Cronenberg's Videodrome.
Yeah. Once again, thanks to Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
Freaking in high school. Hey, look. You guys want to watch a movie? Okay, here. Put this on.
Just going to put this on. Just
what the fuck is this?
Just sit there. I'm not going to say anything. Just put this on.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a habit of doing that. He had a habit of that.
I mean, it's a great movie, but man, what a weird one, especially when you're not expecting it.
It helps to be prepared. Again, another one that was on a Netflix Instant in the past, and for me, it was a past Netflix Instant pick of the week. Not on there now, but it could come back anytime, so keep an eye out for Videodrome. James Woods, Videodrome. Deborah Harry's in it.
Long live the new flesh.
Long live the new flesh, absolutely. What's his name? Brian Oblivion. Oblivion. Yes. That's again, we were talking earlier about that 80s watershed moment where the special effects caught up to the imaginations of the filmmakers, and Cronenberg had one hell of an imagination.
Oh, what? Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Oh, man. The handgun? So creepy.
Videotapes
in the vagina stomach, and turns into a bomb, and it blows the guy up, and he goes through the wall, and it almost leaves like an outline of him, like a cartoon.
What?
Cronenberg's crazy, man.
He is.
Love the guy.
Agreed.
And that brings us to your number one.
We talked about this last week. It was Billy Dee's Death in the Movies. Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods is great.
It's so good. It's timely. It's modern. It goes to the roots, but also does something new. Yeah. I mean,
it sends up the classics while at the same time honoring them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have read online of a couple people, opinions whom I respect, when Cabin in the Woods came out. So people were like, yeah, it's not really a horror film because it's so jokey. But I would say I would say that it's fine. You can have a horror comedy and the movie still be a horror film.
Yeah.
You know? And that one got jokey, but it also got pretty intense and bloody.
Pretty fucking scary, yeah.
Spoiler alert, everyone dies at the end, but that's a good thing.
Yeah. What? Oh, but everyone dies at the end.
Yes, like the world is going to end.
Like
the world is everyone.
Ending,
billion people are
they
going to
all
die. And
that's a good thing.
It's presented as a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, hysterical. No Cabin in the Woods sequel. Prequel, maybe. God, that'd be terrible. Don't do it.
No.
We don't want explanations of anything. We don't want to see how they built all that stuff.
No.
They built the underground lair.
Watching Thor.
How those guys got those jobs.
Watching Thor do a motorcycle leap into a giant energy field and then falling down into a cavern was probably the greatest thing I've ever seen.
The best is because I remember they showed the bird smacking into that wall, so I remembered. Obviously, you're supposed to remember that moment.
Yeah.
Right? They show you that. It's not a surprise.
But they don't see the bird smacking
the
wall.
They don't know.
We do.
So he gets on the bike. He's like, when I get over there, I'm going to call for help. You do this. You do that.
The whole time, I'm just like, this is so good.
Like this guy's going to eat it.
Yep.
I remember seeing it in a packed theater. He hits the wall. And there are some people in the theater that, like, maybe they were in the bathroom when the bird hit the wall.
Or they just didn't remember.
They weren't paying attention. But he hits that wall, and people are like,
oh, my God. And I'm just like, yes, he did it.
And then there's a shot of the body and the bike bouncing along the wall as it goes down. It's, like, really deep. They look over, and it's like, do, 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 in distance. That's so funny. So funny. Great movie, man. So good. Good top five. Good job. My top five, I got to go with The Exorcist for number five.
Okay.
Because that is...
It's The Exorcist.
It's The Exorcist. It's fucking creepy. When they did the, quote, Exorcist, the version you've never seen before, the special edition in 2000, they put that out in theaters. I saw that in the theater. That's a fucked up experience with the sound and everything and the huge picture and the spider walk down the backwards crab walk with the blood coming out the mouth and then all the added like skull faces that they added here and there just real quick like skull face and, and then they put the light on and it disappears like what was that? Was that skull face? Are they coming for me?
Yes,
so
they are.
So that movie is fucking scary.
They are coming for you.
Number four, I find myself watching over and over and over and over. I love the atmosphere of it. I love the creepiness. I love the literal darkness of it, like just the look of the movie. I'm talking about 1979's Alien.
It's a scary fucking movie.
It's pretty scary.
Sci-fi horror.
It's credited for being one of those movies that kind of changed the way sci-fi movies were made in that... Because first, before, we're not really talking about sci-fi movies, but in the 50s, it was all like, you know, Spaceman from Mars and a bunch of bullshit like that, Plan 9 from Outer Space. 2001 came around, and that was like the first sci-fi movie for adults.
Yeah.
Just like The Exorcist was kind of made for adults. 2001 was specifically for adults. But that one still presented science, like space exploration, as clean and pristine. It's NASA. It's official. An alien, they're space truckers.
Yeah, exactly.
They work for a company. They're on some... The Nostromo is just like a fucking... It's a junk heap. It is a giant fucking piece of shit. And they're just dudes. Yaphet Kotto was walking around with his ball cap and a Henry Dean set. And yeah, sure, they are on hypersleep and they got woke up and shit and they're flying the spaceship. But they're just a bunch of dudes. And that what made it seem more real. It was like, fuck, I'm just a dude.
You are.
An alien could kill me pretty easily.
You can thank Jodorowsky's Dune for never being made.
Ah, I wish. Oof. Would I rather have Jodorowsky's Dune or Alien?
Or all the stuff that spawned because it never happened.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough, man.
I just want to visit the alternate reality.
The alternate.
Just so I can watch it and then I'll come back.
So many alternate universes I want to go to. My number three, what was Videodrome for you? Was that two or three?
Three.
That was your three?
No, two.
That was your two. Cronenberg was my three. I love Videodrome. I do. I also love Scanners.
Yeah.
Another great horror film. But my favorite one of all of them is The Fly.
Yeah.
I love The Fly because
Goldblum.
The Videodrome is cool because it's a crazy story, crazy special effects. James Woods is awesome. You know,
and it's something, it's more than a horror movie, too.
It
you
is.
Know?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that. But I like The Fly more because that's more of an emotional story, an emotional hook. By the end, when it's all over, it feels more like a big tragic opera than anything else, which I love about it. So that's my number three. My number two, I went with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
The Shining.
If you don't want to get sued, Monkey Shins. And it's, man, it just... It's a Shining. It's a fucking Shining. It's Now, for that movie... Stanley Kubrick read this, I think it was a Nietzsche essay about how the most horrific things in the world are things that are familiar to us, but then when we look at them in a certain way and we realize that they have menace to them, they can be different. So apparently Kubrick pored over that essay and he put all that into The Shining. So that's why throughout the movie, the horrifying elements are like a typewriter with a piece of paper in it that says, you know, all work and no play, like that thing. Or, you know...
The carpet changing.
The big wheel, just rolling around the big wheel around.
It's fucking scary.
Yeah, those things end up having an air of menace to them, even though they're intimately familiar. And it's because of that familiarity that makes them like, oh, why is this so weird? I've seen this before. So it's so good. Again, we're talking about Stanley Kubrick. You guys probably might be the smartest filmmaker ever in terms of IQ and the things he's trying to do with the visual language. Yeah. So we got that. And then my number one, I talk about this movie a billion thousand times, The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. So good. I don't know what else I can say about it.
Yeah, I mean, good Lord, I've seen that movie probably like 10, 12 times.
Yeah, at the minimum. And I want to watch it again. All right, so let's go. Let's see what we got here with good old Billy D. Pulled up this up. Billy D's very special. Ooh, it's double special.
Double special.
Billy D's very special Halloween lists for Halloween special.
Special.
Thanks, Billy. Here we go. You can follow Billy D on Twitter at I Love Blood. Also on Elo if you're on the Elo. He writes, "Happy Halloween, boils and ghouls." I assume that's how he wanted me to read that sentence.
Of course.
Our fearless leader has, has asked me for some tricks and treats for the listeners for the Cinema Crespiso Halloween bonus episode. I am a self-confessed film geek, but somewhat of a specialist in the genre of horror. So take a drink, Chris. This is going to get long. So for the timid among you, I've got a DIY Hollywood... For the timid among you, I've got a DIY Halloween Film Fest. And for the more adventurous, seasoned, deeply desensitized among you, you can play along with my Halloween Film Fest.
I'm not sure if I want to watch that.
That's going to rock your world. Without further ado, I present to you the Billy D's Did the Movies Beginner's Guide to Halloween. I don't have that thing. All right, here we go. Poltergeist.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
One of the first horror films I ever saw and still holds up to this day. Craig T. Nelson kills it in this. Who's that?
Coach.
Yeah, Coach. A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
The beginning of the legend and the introduction of one of today's biggest stars.
Johnny Depp.
The Shining. Hey, here we go. Right. Not much to say about this other than not seeing it is doing yourself a great disservice. I agree. Evil Dead 2, skip part 1. This is a true splatter masterpiece, complete with slapstick humor, geysers of blood, and that chin.
Yes.
Can't deny that chin.
Uh-uh.
And finally, his top 5 for you plebes, 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
That is a really good one. The film that launched an entire golden age for B-movie monster. Zombies wouldn't be on TV every Sunday if it weren't for this movie. And that soundtrack, well, the soundtrack is amazing. I would say it's a combination of 28 Days Later and the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead remake. Because those came out within like a year of each other. And both of those movies really fucking, it got zombies going again for the first time really since like the late 80s. For sure. Now, for the brave among you, the Billy D's that the movie's guide to the most batshit Halloween ever. This year, I'm saving up a ton of nutty choices for my big night. Number 1. Hausu. H-A-U-S-U. This Japanese cult film is certifiably insane. It just happens to be one of the best insane Japanese films ever.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look up that one. I don't know that one. Dead Alive.
No.
My favorite movie of all time. If I know you and you haven't seen this movie, I changed that for you. I'm so nice. What a nice guy. Kind of written like an old Chinese man, in a sense. Phantasm. Phantasm's good. I like Phantasm a lot. This interdimensional horror film kicked off a franchise and features one of the most terrifying antagonists of all time. He's talking about the tall man.
Yeah.
He's fucking... Tall man's creepy. Again, going back to the familiarity thing. You see tall man a lot, like walking down the street of a suburb in the middle of the day. And the reason that's freaky is because it's like, that guy doesn't fucking belong in that setting. There's something odd with this picture. And it starts and ends with the tall man. With that guy. Exactly. A Field in England. I don't know this one. Do you know this one?
Uh-uh.
A Field in England. This minimalist fever dream of a film catapulted Ben Wheatley to the top of my must-watch director's list. Come for the psychedelic imagery. Stay for the psychedelic cannibalism.
Sweet.
And finally, The Thing. Parentheses, The Complete Thing. I'm watching The Thing and The Thing back to back. Normally, I'd save The Thing for the first snowstorm of the year, but I thought sometimes you just gotta treat yourself. Are you talking about the 2011 The Thing? Billy, are you a secret fan of the 2011 The Thing?
He might be.
Oh, Billy. Yeah, I'll give it to him. I hate that movie.
Well, it's because you like the original so much.
I like it so much. It's like, what are they doing, you fucking idiots? So that's it. Those are my recommendations for a pretty solid Halloween film festival. Play along at home and hit me up on Twitter at ILoveBlood to tell me how scared you got. Stay scared, homies. Billy D. Thank you, Billy. We appreciate it, sir. Those are all great choices. Some of those ones I was like trying to come up with my list for the top 5. And, like, he mentioned a couple of them in there.
Yeah, Phantasm.
Yeah, Phantasm made my list. I'm looking over this list here to see anything we haven't talked about. We talked about Scanners, Videodrome, The Fly, The Thing, Dawn of the Dead, The Host, Korean film, The Host. Good.
Monster movie.
Modern monster movie. Pan's Labyrinth, we mentioned during the game. I love that one. The Shining is on my list. 28 Days Later, he mentioned. American Werewolf in London, we mentioned earlier. There's one shot, again, back to familiarity. There's a one shot in American Werewolf in London where it's from they're in a subway, and the main dude that's running away from the werewolf, he's like, he fell down, he's on the ground, and he's at the bottom of an escalator, and the shot is from the top of the escalator. And coming from the top of the screen, coming towards the dude in super slow motion as the werewolf, and it's like one paw first and the next one, and it takes a couple steps forward, and it looks like a practical effect shot from far away, and it's so unsettling looking because it's like, oh, you're in a subway, this is the tube, and there's a giant werewolf.
And there's a giant werewolf trying to eat you.
And it looks fucking real. Exorcist on the list, Cabin in the Woods, Zero Number One, Let the Right One In.
Oh, that's a good one. I prefer the original.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? I noticed on the Rotten Tomatoes, Let Me In, still very well reviewed.
Really?
It's a good movie. It just has the unfortunateness of coming after Let the Right One In and being very similar to it. But I mean, Matt Reeves is good.
Pretty much the same movie.
He went on to do the fucking recent Planet of the Apes movie, which is, you know, pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Alien, I mentioned. Shaun of the Dead.
Mm.
Rom-com, zom rom-com, great stuff. Phantasm, Billy mentioned it. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, I talked about it earlier. Gremlins!
Ah, Christmas movies.
Gremlins. Planet Terror, I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror. That's one of my favorites of his.
I don't know. I found out that, I mean, I guess it's a horror movie. It's just really campy, but that's the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. When the guy's like, I'm gonna cut off your balls, and he's got a jar full of nuts. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it was also a movie when I remember watching it for the first time in a theater and being like, I have no idea what's going to fucking happen next. Like, any horrible thing could happen at any fucking moment. Yep. And it's unsettling me right now. And I love it, because that's why I paid for it. And, ooh, you know what I wanted to mention also? Might as well end with this one. Anthology movies. The Twilight Zone movie. And Creepshow. Both those movies, like, they have their anthology, so it's short stories throughout them. And they all have stories that I like and some that I don't. The Twilight Zone one has one by the guy who did Gremlins. And I don't know if you remember this, but it's the one where the family is in the house with the kid, and the kid has psychic powers, so they're all scared shitless of the kid. Whatever he wants, they're like, oh, yeah, that's great. You can do it. Yeah, yeah. And they're all miserable. And then he makes, like, crazy cartoon things, like, come alive out of the TV and shit. And it's the type of thing where the effects are, like, I mean, obviously, like, here's a plastic thing that just popped up on the set, but it still, I think, looks better than fucking bad CG.
Yeah.
You know, and the designs are genuinely creepy. And in Creepshow, that's the short story with Stephen King, where he plays a dumb hick who finds the meteor, and he touches it, and then he starts growing grass all over him until he's suffocating in his own grass body, and then he puts a gun to his head, but what he thinks is his head. He's like, I hope this is my head, and then he shoots himself to try to kill himself. That is fucking genuinely scary. Because he didn't deserve it. He was just a dumb guy who just touched a rock.
Don't touch rocks.
Don't touch rocks, people, especially ones with green guns. There you go, horror movies. That's the end. Hope you learned something. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks.
I did.
You did? Did you, Drew? Cool. I learned about your top five. It's a good top five list you got over there. So thanks, Drew. Appreciate it. Where can people find you online?
At Antihero419. All over the internet.
All over the interwebs. Find them. Snapchat them your titties. Elohim your recipes. Tweet him your opinions. Don't bother with Facebook. You won't find them on there. Unless you do 2 seconds worth of sleuthing. But you will have to do sleuthing.
You will have to do some sleuthing.
Just
a little bit.
Need to be using that word more often. Sleuthing. Hit me up on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Follow the show at Crespediso. Twitter.com/Crespediso. Facebook.com/Crespediso.
Hello.com/Crespediso.
And ChrisCrespo.com. Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate it. And we'll be back this weekend with episode 95 of Cinema Crespediso with hopefully special guest Cool Carl Verna, the Video Burna. We'll be talking about some cool projects he has lined up. And only 5 weeks, 6 weeks away from episode 100, Drew. Hope you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right. We are out of here, guys. Peace out.